A warning.
HPPodCraft.com.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back into television, Manimo is coming. Manimo is coming.
Oh boy, there was a time when I would be excited to hear that Manimal is coming to television or anywhere else, but now, I don't know, not after that episode.
Hi folks, this is the Lovecraft Literary Podcast. I'm Chris Lackey, and this is our bonus episode for September covering the Manimal episode entitled Night of the Scorpion.
You sound so depressed.
This one's a stinker. I'm up front, man. It's just it was boring. There wasn't any crazy zaniness to it. It was just, eh.
This episode has killed my love. You know, Manimal used to stir my imagination, and now it doesn't even stir my curiosity. It simply produces no effect. I loved it because it was marvelous, but it has thrown it all away. It is shallow and stupid. It is nothing to me now. What is Manimal but a third-rate character with a panther face?
Well played, sir. Well played.
I really enjoyed reading Dorian Gray this month. I guess I knew somehow I'd have to pay for that fun. And This was the time. I remember I was really worried on the last Manimal episode that we did that it would become run-of-the-mill boring. You know, that was a danger. There was so much crazy stuff in that initial episode, but then it pulled itself out, had the magic show deal, there was a drum with Ron Jeremy on it, so everything good. Was okay, but yeah, this one was a drag. Toy Galaxy dropped a video about the history of Manimal on their YouTube page, and a bunch of folks forwarded that to us, which was nice. Always glad to be thought of as the next thing you think of after Manimal. I recommend checking the episode out. It's about 15 minutes long, but I really wish I'd watched it before I'd watched this episode, because I would have had more excitement about it, whereas I hated this episode so much that it felt like work.
Well, yeah, I thought we did a pretty good job. There was nothing in there that I didn't already know.
Yeah, for the most part, it was all information that I had.
Yeah, so we done our research.
I'm gonna tell you something though. I even questioned after watching this if we should even do a bonus episode on it. But you know what this is about for me personally? It's about resilience. You know, this Manimal was bad.
Sure.
Probably some of the other episodes are gonna be worse down the line, but I can't control that. All I can control are my reactions to Manimal. I can give it my attention. I can be aware of what's going on in these episodes. But if I want to make it through this, I have to take time to work on myself, make sure I'm healthy and sane for the future. And I'm talking about Manimal here. And I'm only talking about Manimal. So let's talk this out. Let's express our fears and anxieties via Manimal, and then I'm going to go eat a taco. By the way, I was so glad when I checked the notes that you did a synopsis of this episode, because I had no idea what was going on in it. Did you write these down from tracking the plot, or did you reference the DVD booklet?
This is what I did. I'm going to explain to you, because you warned me that this was a bad episode. As it was on, I just typed.
Oh, man.
I had to pause it a few times, because there were certain things I couldn't get, like the people's names. I found like the IMDb page, which had the names of the characters. So with that, I was able to get, because they have weird names, some of these people. So I don't.
Yeah. Well, you were smart to do that. I should have given myself something to do while I was watching it, because it was a little Clockwork Orange just to stay awake during the thing. You know,
that was all right. So here we go. Let's get into some Manimal.
Manimal.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. He's the guy, and then his father, and the thing.
Oh, by the way, when they did the intro, though, I know this got in your head. When his dad leaves him because he's a crappy kid, right? Uh-huh, when you watched that intro, you went, oh, yep, there's where his father deserts him.
I did.
No, I'm out of here to get a pack of smokes and never come back.
So this episode begins on a cruise ship at night. On this cruise ship, there's a disco dance floor with some terrible music playing.
Well, okay, hold the phone. This was perhaps the Sybil Vane move of the episode for me. The thing that entranced me, because you say terrible music, but as I referenced on the comments show, or maybe it got cut, but I was talking about how I watched Stayin' Alive, the movie, the John Travolta movie that's a sequel to Saturday Night Fever on the weekend, and the music in that movie is just an abomination. They took this disco classic, and then in the sequel, Frank Stallone did the soundtrack, and it sounds like a bad car racing video game. It's so awful. So when this started, and there was a boat, and there was disco playing, even though it was kind of weak disco, I thought, oh boy, the universe is doing me a kindness. You know, it's coming to me with some disco energy. I fell in love hard and fast, which made the disappointment later so much more crushing.
Now we fade to a room on the ship where this guy is tied up. This is Mr. Sloan. And now there's another dude in a suit injecting him with something. I think it's truth serum. I'm not exactly sure. There's another guy there with a terrible toupee. He's an older dude and he wants some information. Now there are two other guys in suits. So there's three baddies in this room, all wearing three-piece suits for some reason. I guess it's like an 80s thing for bad guys.
Yeah, it's what the costumer had in their size. We brought these over from the Untouchables. They donated them.
But toupee, he wants this list and the guy's not going to give him the list. We don't know what the list is. We don't know any of this stuff. But under the influence of the drugs, Sloan spills that the list is with the money. And he's like, what money? And he's like, $2 million. He goes, I don't care about the $2 million. I want the list. So it's like, whoa, this guy doesn't care about money. He wants this list. What's this about? I don't know. So Sloan slips into a coma with his eyes open, which I didn't know was a thing. Can you go into a coma and your eyes will be open?
Manimal explains it all. You really weren't paying attention.
When he does this, they're like, oh man, we've lost our trail. We're not going to be able to find this list because this guy was the only link to it. But toupee, this dude, he wants to make sure that no information ever gets out about this list. He wants to kill Sloan. But I thought he did want the list. So why does he want to kill him if he doesn't want the list? It's very confusing.
Yeah, he might come out of the coma.
Yeah, I don't understand. He goes, well, I guess if he's not coming out of the coma, let's kill him. But he's like, maybe we'll come out of, I don't know. It's very confusing. Point is, they pull out a little wooden box and there's a tarantula and they leave the tarantula on the body. A very venomous tarantula. Again, I'm confused.
The audio is so terrible in the scene, too. So I don't know how you were even making out that much plot of it. I just didn't know what was going on. And again, there's no subtitles on that DVD.
No. And these guys have their accents. They're doing accents, but I'm not sure what accent it's supposed to be. Through most of the episode, at the end, they say where they're supposed to be from. And I'm like, the Russians.
Yeah.
Okay. They just kind of have this sort of like, I'm from another place. That's how they all talk.
They all talk that way. And they have all of the exposition. Everything in here that's information we need to have as a viewer comes through the poorly recorded dialogue of bad actors using bad accents. And I would almost, if this was a Sharktopus movie or something where they clearly shot it in Eastern Europe and that's, they had to get local actors and that's why. Fine. But this is something they shot, you know, here in L.A. Why are they having these bad actors with bad accents deliver all the dialogue? Were they financiers or something? I just couldn't understand why they were doing that.
No idea.
It went bad so fast. They show me this cruise ship disco and then they go to this nondescript room for this scene. It's like giving a child an ice cream cone. And then when he tastes it, his parents get divorced. That's what it was like.
Yes, it was like that.
Yeah.
Accurate assessment. The next day, the police show up with Lieutenant Riviera and Dr. Jonathan Chase right behind him. Sloan's eyes are still frozen open, but he's actually dead. And so is the tarantula. The tarantula is dead.
Yeah.
Dr. Chase notices the rope burns on the arm, so they know that he was tied up. That's a clue. He's not a forensics guy. They should have a forensics guy doing that stuff. He's the animal expert. And I guess they brought him in because of the dead tarantula that they didn't find until he was already there. So go figure.
Oh my God, you're right. I was just about to say, for once they had a credible reason to bring him in. They didn't see it until they got there, did they?
God. No.
Damn this episode. And then the lieutenant is so annoyed that he has to do any police work. He's just like, oh, I suppose this is going to be another crazy crime. Which I don't understand why he's like that. And then so they injected the guy with poison and then put the tarantula on it and the tarantula died because it drank the poison?
Well, okay, yeah. There's
Heather had a theory. She was half watching this, thank God, and said, well, no, did they inject the tarantula with poison and then it bit the guy so the poison came through the... That was their way of getting the poison into the guy.
No, that's not it at all. I wasn't sure if spiders drink blood or what happens. So I went to the San Diego Zoo's website and they had this information. Tarantulas are nocturnal hunters preying on a variety of insects and other spiders and small lizards, snakes, and frogs. They rely on ambush and pursuit to catch their prey with a bite from their fangs. The fangs release venom that kills their victim. A chemical in the venom helps dissolve the victim's flesh. Tarantulas can also crush their prey using powerful mouth parts. Though people often are afraid of tarantula bites, the reality is that most have venom comparable to that of a bee. And remember, a tarantula would rather hide from you than bite you. So the whole idea that they would put a tarantula on a guy to bite him is preposterous because the tarantula just wouldn't by a motionless person unless he like rolled over on it and it was threatened.
It's a good thing he's motionless too, because didn't we establish at some point that like if a tarantula would shatter if you threw it across
the room?
Well, what made me laugh is I do think that there must have been, or at least maybe they were suggesting that the guys, they gave him truth serum, not knowing it was a bad batch or whatever, right? So it kills the guy, and they go, we got to cover this up. So they put the tarantula on him to bite him to cover their crime, because people go, oh, he was hanging out, and the tarantula got on this cruise ship, a stowaway, and came up and, like, bit the guy, and that's why he's dead.
That makes sense, but I don't think that's what was happening.
Well, it makes sense, except... There's rope marks that Jonathan Chase sees right away on the wrists.
Yeah.
And he's got sodium pentothal or whatever in his bloodstream.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
I mean, I'm not a forensic pathologist or anything, but if I came in and saw the spider and then the rope burns, I'm not going to think the spider tied him up before he bit him. I'm going to know.
Nope.
There's all this other evidence.
They were using this tarantula as some kind of torture tool to like get this guy to talk. They were threatening him.
But that's true. They had him in a box and the guy knew there was a tarantula in the box.
And it wasn't that it was a bad batch. It was that the guy had an allergic reaction to it and it gave him a heart attack, which is what we find out later.
Mm-hmm. And none of this is just because they had a tarantula. We're debating this like it was thought. Like they brought the tarantula in after the script. That's not the way it went.
I just want to point out that this episode is called Night of the Scorpion.
Yeah, well, that's the weird element.
So at this point, Detective Mackenzie shows up. She's the one saving grace of the show. I have such a crush on her. Mm. So like every time she's on screen, I'm just a little hypnotized by her. A woman comes in crying and she sees her father dead. And this woman has the best hair.
But this actress, Mary Margaret Humes, is still working. And check this out. We've talked on the show before about Angeline, who is that blonde kind of busty woman who bought all of those billboards in Los Angeles trying to get media attention. And then as a result, those billboards are in movies and stuff. Well, Mary Margaret, she was born in Florida in 1954, former Miss Florida, third runner-up to Miss USA in 1975. She was encouraged by Burt Reynolds to move to Hollywood. She was discovered by advertising her photo, name, and phone number on a billboard visible from the 20th Century Fox Studios lot.
Oh, whoa.
The billboard was seen by Mel Brooks, who phoned and asked her to read for a part in History of the World Part 1,
which she got.
So that tactic actually worked.
Wow.
And it worked well, because looking at her IMDb page, it's an 80s guest star resume that is like the EGOT of this kind of thing. She was Dukes of Hazzard, Knight Rider, Love Boat, A-Team, Riptide, Hunter, Hardcastle and McCormick, The Fall Guy, Night Court, T.J. Hooker.
Wow.
She's like the Forrest Gump of things I watched when I should have been doing homework. And it was that kind of thing that when she came in, I went, she's in my brain somewhere, this woman.
Yeah. We cut to a scene where Mackenzie is driving Sloane's daughter. Her name is Terry. Terry is explaining what was going on with her father. Her father was in the Bahamas, and he sent her a parcel to tell her to pick something up from a locker at an airport. And we also see that they're being followed in the car. Now, back in Jonathan's lab, he explains to Ty that the tarantula was murdered. There's poison in the blood of the human that he attacked.
But as you established,
spiders don't drink blood. They dissolve the flesh, and then maybe he would eat the dissolved flesh. But again, spiders don't do that. I really don't get it. Terry and Detective Mackenzie show up at Jonathan's house with a letter from her father. One of the baddies is outside. He knows that they're there. The letter to Terry says, "Only open in the case of my death. Trust no one." And then immediately Jonathan says, "May I?" He takes the letter from her and opens it. It says on there, trust no one. Terry, what are you doing?
Oh, Terry.
And you're trusting Dr. Jonathan Chase? Come on. This envelope contains a $100 bill, a key to a safe deposit box, a plane ticket to Nassau, which is in the Bahamas, and a note saying that he's giving her $2 million. Terry, she's scared because, of course, she could be next. Whoever killed her father might be after her because of what he sent her. Could be the money. Could be what's in the safe deposit box. Don't know. So Jonathan, Terry, and Ty, they all go to the Bahamas?
They all go to the Bahamas. And when they went to the Bahamas, I thought, oh, they'll just show exteriors and shoot stuff on a soundstage. But they were showing the actors in the exterior locations. And that's when all of this fell together for me. But I think they were. Well, maybe they weren't. I'm not sure. But here's the thing.
Okay, sure.
Somebody went to the Bahamas because it wasn't stock footage, okay? And that's when I went, oh, this is a boondoggle. Because Glenn Larson, he wrote the script for this one. He has the script credit for this. And it's a terrible script.
Right.
He's a better writer than that. So I think he did not write the script for Manimal. This was just sort of a Mad Lib Russian mobster plot. He could have used for any of the five shows he had shooting at the time. You know, he had Automan going on. He had all these things. Manimal itself is kind of a Frankenstein show where they stitch things together because you got to slot in the Panther Hawk transformations from Stan Winston, and then you know you got to use the warehouse of boxes that's everywhere.
Oh my god!
So
again,
my guess is that on top of this, they wanted to do an episode that was an away show so they could get their vacation funded. So they grabbed this generic script and they stitched all that into it with the Bahamas scenes.
It's weird because there's definitely stock footage because there's different film grain. In there, so some of it's stock footage. And a lot of it looks like it could be on a set, but they have these pretty elaborate music and dance scenes, but they could have just hired Caribbean actors to come and do that stuff.
So I'm because not sure. The audio is good, so you know it's not outside. Like, they're showing their hair blowing in the wind and stuff, but it's not 80 yards, so
no.
They're on a set.
Yeah.
Sure. Like, when they're doing the limbo stuff, that's all here in L.A.
Yeah, we're getting to limbo stuff. Don't jump
in. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't want to spoil this plan. I mean, I think anybody who's listening is going to, they're like, oh, here comes the limbo. Predictable.
this dude pops up when they get into the airport. This guy is Arnold Sipes, Terry's father's old business partner.
Again, this guy is unintelligible. I didn't understand anything he was saying.
He's dodgy as all get out, and they detect that he's dodgy, but he persuades them to go to a Caribbean party. So there's the scene, there's lots of dancing and calypso music. Jonathan, he gets Terry to go with Ty to do some limbo dancing so he can talk to Sipes on his own.
He goes, why don't you go limbo? And she's like, well, my dad just died. I don't know if I feel like it. He goes, come on, it'll take your mind off it. She goes, okay. Oh, Dr. Chase.
After they're gone, Sipes tells Jonathan that he knows Terry's father was in some kind of trouble and that he was planning on running. Sipes is looking for the money because he took money that he wasn't supposed to. Terry's father. But Chase, he keeps mum about the fact that Terry's supposed to be getting these $2 million.
The business partner is always the bad guy. Iron Man, that movie totally stole this plot.
So Mackenzie calls from New York and she says the coroner found out that Sloan died of a heart attack, which I said earlier, because of the drug, most likely unintentionally. Mackenzie says that she's on the next flight to the Bahamas. Can the police do this? Can the police just go? I've got a case.
No!
We got to go to the Bahamas now.
Why would they do that when there's a police force in the Bahamas that knows the Bahamas that they could call?
Now, at this point, Terry has to use the toilet, and Sipes takes her to keep an eye on her because they're afraid of baddies. Fat lot of good that does because they get jumped by a dude in a suit with a stocking over his head.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan's animal hearing picks up the trouble from the table, and Jonathan and Ty show up and chase the guy away.
This was like 15 minutes in. So the first evidence of Manimal powers was this super hearing. Zero transformations. We've been just doing nothing but plot until this time.
Dude, I think you're totally right that this was not a Manimal script and it got rewritten.
Otherwise, there would have been a transformation in the opening
scene. Well, even when the transformations happen, they don't really need to happen.
Yeah. But I did love that the guy, you know, we're about to find out that the guy who attacked him is in on it with Sipes, right?
Yeah.
And he complains. He goes, man, you really roughed me up. But I would say that he should have been more angry that he fired a gun at some other people who, and he didn't even know who they were. He came to rough him up with the pantyhose on his head, and the first noise he turned around and fired wildly into the crowd.
That was hilarious. I thought that guy worked for the Russians. He was like a Russian spy as well. Mm-hmm. And that Sipes is also part of the Russian spy thing. But we find out later that that dude in the stocking mask who was shooting into a crowd was a CIA agent.
I know.
It's ridiculous. So the next day at the bank, they open the safe deposit box. It holds a briefcase with all the money, and it's got $2 million. A blonde guy shows up. He's one of the Russians, and he forces Jonathan at gunpoint to walk out with the briefcase. Ty notices Jonathan is in trouble, and he does this bit where he pretends that he's a Caribbean salesman with some hats, and then he attacks Blondie. It's pretty awesome. He totally knocks the gun out of his hand and punches him, and I was like, yeah, Ty's kicking ass.
Finally.
Because Jonathan got in the car. Jonathan gets out of the car, leaves the briefcase in there for some reason. I don't know why. But obviously, plot. But he jumps on the back of the car. So Jonathan is leaping on the back of the car. Dude, this made me laugh. This part made me laugh.
Yes, this made me
laugh. The car's weaving to try and get him off of it, and they drive out of town, and he's still on the back. It's weaving back and forth. They're like in the countryside.
They go on a long trip with Manimal holding onto the back the whole time.
He had to be on there for at least 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Eventually, he falls off the back of the car.
I want to see that 10-minute film of him, them driving out of the country and just the viewpoints of all the people that see that car. How does it affect their life to see Jonathan Chase clinging to the back of that car?
And so this is a thing that totally bugs me. Okay, so he falls off the car, and it's like, oh, he's going to transform into an animal to get the car, to chase it, to follow it.
Oh, yeah. And of course, that's a fast moving car. So, you know, it's going to be a fast moving animal.
He's going to be the hawk, because then he can go up really high and figure out where it went.
Elementary.
But he turns into a panther. He turns it. And then he runs on the road and chases after them.
Yeah, because he has to catch up, because the whole time he was transforming and panting and looking at his hand, they were still driving. They're two towns away by this point. So he's got to, as a panther.
Fun fact, panthers can't run that fast. They can't run as fast as a car.
No, one would assume the panther got the bus or something.
They could run pretty quick, but for a very short amount of time, no way could he catch up to that car. It was preposterous.
He used his panther contacts. That's why he turned into the panther, because the panther has a network of folks, you know. So he knew another panther with a sports car. Bada bing, bada boom. They're at the warehouse, which I predict. I go, well, he had to turn into a panther, because I bet it's gonna be
panther shows up at the warehouse.
Yep,
and it's the same flipping warehouse set. The same one that they shot at in the other two episodes. The bad guys are always at a warehouse.
Another film I want to see is that day, that shooting day, that one day they had in the box warehouse with the panther. Because they had to get these. That must have been what it was, and why all these bad guys are non-actors and terrible is because they were just whoever was available that day.
Exactly. At the warehouse, it's Toupee, blonde guy, and another dude. They have the money. They don't care. They want the lists. So they decide that the girl must have the list, and they're going to have to pick up Terry. As the guys who aren't Toupee leave, we get an awesome cougar sound effect, and the panther attacks. First, the dark-haired guy gets attacked, and then the Toupee guy gets attacked, and he passes out with fear from the panther.
There's no magic tricks. The panther doesn't press any buttons or anything. It's just a straight up menace. As a result of there not being distractions or fun, I hate to say this, but it kind of reveals what a shitty actor the panther is. Can't keep an eye line. Not really selling the menace. How do I believe that guy passed out from fear? I wanted to, you know, give him a scratch under the chin. So to the panther, I'm like, you went to the Bahamas, man. Turn something in. You got a vacation out of this.
So back at the hotel, I guess they got the money back. Jonathan, Ty, Mac, and Terry are all trying to figure out what these guys are after, since it's not the money. Jonathan looks at the note. Nothing special about the note. He looks at the extra $100 bill, because it's $2 million in the case and then a $100 bill that was in the envelope. Obviously, we all know that it's something to do with the $100 bill, but what? I don't know. They can't figure it out, but they know Sipes is in on this somehow. So they figure they're going to do the thing where they pretend like they don't know Sipes is in on it and just give him the money and stuff. Mm-hmm. So they go to his office, and he's got a recording device built into the wall, hidden behind a painting. Why? Yeah. It's really confusing, because it doesn't really pay off at all. It doesn't make any sense. Mm-mm. And he's packing heat. He's got a gun.
Yeah.
He leaves the office to go meet those guys. Jonathan sneaks in, and there's a parrot in a cage. He lets the parrot out of the cage and into the wild, and then he becomes the parrot.
But there's no transformation scene.
No.
So I, you know, imagine a scenario where you're watching this and you kind of fell asleep a little bit and didn't see the part where the parrot got let out. And so that when you're watching this, you really don't know if the parrot's Manimal or not.
Well, also, I was confused about this, because what's his butt started the recorder and left. Mm. Jonathan Chase sneaks in and talks to the parrot. So I'm like, oh, he's got a recording of Dr. Jonathan Chase in his office when he didn't know he was supposed to be there.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't pay off at all. Terry and Mac come in to talk with Sipes. He looks at the money and reveals that he's working with the CIA, or her father was a CIA agent as well. Tells him that the money was embezzled from the government, and the guy who faked the attack on Sipes, he's CIA. Back at the hotel, the Russians show up just shooting. Ty gets wounded. They kidnap Mac and Terry. Jonathan shows up, bandages up Ty. Ty figures out they have an extra $100 bill and that it's special.
Yeah, there was a lot of counterfeit business going on too, talking about the serial numbers of the bills and them being fresh and all this stuff. And I thought, maybe this is two scripts that they stitched into this, because there's a truth serum that kills people and now we've got counterfeiting. And if these had been written for Manimal, clearly a counterfeiting plot, Manimal would have become the squid who provides the ink for the counterfeit pills. It's obvious. But yeah. Dr. Calamari is hungry. Uh-oh, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
That definitely would have been a scene.
That would have been brilliant. Now, Jonathan goes to Sipes' office about the list. Jonathan wants to know where to find the Russians because they've kidnapped the two women. And Sipes reveals that the list is a list of Russian agents that Sloan was able to get. That list is important because if that list of those Russian agents that are in the United States, Jonathan explains how the 100
it's
fits
super
in.
Super complicated.
Something to do with the serial numbers, taking
who
stuff
cares?
Out. It's super convoluted.
But basically, there's $100
that
bill.
He puts a lighter under because
lemon
juice or something on there. And it's the list.
On the bill.
And at the
it's
top of the list,
Sipes' name.
So Sipes.
A Russian spy
all time working for the CIA,
and then Jonathan gets captured,
and he so the other CIA guy,
his name is Donner, we find out finally
doesn't know
point.
That Sipes is a double agent.
He doesn't
CIA
know he's actually a Russian spy.
So they're going to go to the Russian
hideout
together, and they put Ty and Jonathan
the back of a truck.
They tie
why
them up.
Sipes didn't kill
it doesn't
Jonathan.
Make any sense.
No, of course, Jonathan turns into a panther.
They go in the back of the
they
truck
to get him.
They're attacked.
How does this play out?
It's all in the back of a truck.
And Ty come out.
Took care of those guys.
That's it.
Yeah, I totally remember all of that happening.
Human Jonathan and Ty have to go in to rescue the women. The Russians are in that room. They've got the women. They're given Terry some drugs to get her to talk because they think she knows some stuff. Ty comes in and says with his gun, but not with a gun. He has his hand in his pocket and he does that thing where he pretends he has a gun.
It works every time.
We see an elephant walking around. There's all these animals at the docks. Jonathan sees an animal and, you know, rubs his chin. So he's like, oh, he's going to turn into an elephant. Awesome.
Do you realize you can't possibly shoot all of us before we could shoot at least two of you?
Yeah, but my first bullet takes you out, big fella. Now, how you like them apples?
I have no choice but to die for my cause. Gentlemen, you will kill this intruder with your first shot, Miss Mackenzie with your second. That will leave you with Miss Sloan to locate the list.
Now, hold on, call me brother. I mean, let's not get hysterical about this thing.
That's what I thought. Take them.
There's a big slam on the side of the office that they're in. Ty and the girls get out of there, and we see the elephant, which I guess is Jonathan, turned into an elephant, pushing the whole building that they're in off into the water. We've got Mackenzie coming out, and she goes, it's Jonathan, and she hugs the elephant's trunk. And then we have Jonathan stepping out, going, I'd be careful with that elephant if I were you. What? It's not him. He actually got an elephant to do it. That's the same bit that they did in the pilot.
I know, with the snake take.
Back in New York, Terry decides that she wants to thank Jonathan with some deep kissing.
Yep.
Right in front of Ty and Mac, which is really weird and awkward. I don't know what's going on with that.
I was like, thank goodness something weird like that happened that made me uncomfortable. I want to feel something again. I will say this, and I feel very bad about saying it.
Okay.
But at some point, I was like, maybe they could work some sexual harassment into this. This episode was so bad, I kind of missed it.
Well, Lieutenant Riviera shows up, and we get this television gold at the end here.
Sir.
What's going on here? You guys have been gone for 2 days. No phone calls, no wires, nothing.
We were very busy, sir.
Uh-oh. I suppose it's going to be another one of those reports, right? With panthers and anteaters and mongoose.
Well, not exactly. Even stranger than that.
How much stranger?
Well, would you believe a complicated charade between the American CIA and the Russian KGB?
No.
No, I didn't think you would. Well, you may put your mind at rest, Lieutenant. The spider did it.
That's the end of the episode. Why the hell is it called Night of the Scorpion?
I have no idea. Because it was a script for something else.
Yeah.
Night of the Scorpion made sense in that context. He didn't even bother to change the title.
Oh, my God.
Manimal didn't turn into a scorpion.
No.
What would you have done with that title?
Well, instead of having it be a tarantula in the beginning, have it be a scorpion.
Yep.
So maybe what happened was they realized that scorpions are harder to shoot and deal with, so they had to swap it out with the tarantula, and then they just never bothered to change the name of it.
I think that's what happened, yeah. Or it's a metaphor for something. I would have, if it was an original script, they would have used the bad guys to use the scorpion to kill people, like you said, but then they would have brought Dr. Chase in, he would have figured that out, turned into a scorpion, had to bum around the scorpion community for a while, find out who was involved. It would be a deep cover episode, all scorpions. Uh-huh. That's obvious.
That sounds great.
And, you know, it sounds weird, but actually, Larson, I found his commonplace book online. It had lots of manimal plots in there or ideas. And he didn't have a scorpion one like that. I did, yeah. And he did have one, though, that's kind of like that Star Trek episode where Picard lives a whole lifetime. But they had one like where Manimal becomes a wolf. He falls in love. It was an all-wolf episode. He was going to use all stock footage for that and then have McCorkindale voice it. But, you know, there were only 8 episodes of the show, so he couldn't get to it. Other things they were like, he had a note that just read, "What happens to Manimal's clothes? His tailor is magical spider he made into woman, but she's murdering husbands. Uh-oh, Manimal." So that was an episode. But that gives me a clue, because we asked before, how come his clothes don't transform, or why isn't he naked? And it's because of...
Well, they show him ripping, but then they come back. So who knows?
Magical spider, woman, tailor.
That makes sense.
And then here's a note. I don't really know what this is about, but it says, "Tie on heroin, hides a stash in a bird's nest." Don't know if that was a moment for another script or if that's a weird one. And then there's a note. This one blew my mind. 2009, because Gwen Larson lived until, I think, 2014, 2015.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Note from 2009 that says, "Did Manimal's great grandfather f a gorilla?" So I think. I think he might have been listening to our show, because that's right around when we did Arthur German.
Arthur German, yeah, okay. So, wow, we had a fan that was Glenn Larson. It makes sense. You know, it's kind of cyclical, us doing Manimal, him being a fan of the show.
Thanks, folks, for tuning in, and we're going to be back at you in October with some mystery stories, weird mysteries all month. Yeah. Agatha Christie, folks, we haven't gotten to her yet.
No?
It's going to be a good one, but for now, I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast. Boy, very tenuous connection to Lovecraft here. None, really no connection to Lovecraft.
Well, except for that note from Glenn Larson.
Oh, right. Yes, that's true.
And we're exclusively on Patreon, folks.
Bye.